This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. According to official data, Malaysia's population is estimated to comprise some 9 million youths aged between 15 to 30 years old. But youth unemployment for this age range stands at 7.7%, higher than the national unemployment rate of 3.9%. As the country recovers from 2 years of pandemic shocks, are we doing enough to equip Malaysian youth for the economy of the future and provide opportunities for decent work? That's what we're discussing today on World Youth Skills Day with Dato' Muhammad Khalis Abdul Rahim, Group Chief Human Capital Officer at the Malaysia Aviation Group, and Professor Dr. Murali Rahman, Deputy Vice Chancellor of Academic Development and Strategy at the Asia Pacific University. Gentlemen, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you, Shazana. Thank you for having us on board.
Thank you, Shazana.
Professor Murali, I'd like to start with you and get your perspective of youth unemployment from the lens of an educator. How do you think the pandemic experience has affected the nature of youth joblessness?
In terms of how has the pandemic sort of shifted this, there are probably three key observations. Number one, if you look at the pandemic, it's really caused a lot of business to be on the downtrend, as we know. People are trying to recover. So on the first note, I feel that the employers are seemingly a lot more picky in terms of who they choose. So as they want to rebound back into profitability and long-term sustainability, it's imperative that they actually hire youth that's able to meet their employment requirements. Yeah. So from a skills perspective, from a competency perspective, they really want the youths that are there, that are ready to compete, they are really aggressive, and they're ready to turn business around. So that's one key thing from a pandemic perspective that we've been observing. And also we find that increasingly as employers are hiring youth, and even for the students that we actually produce at the university, they are demanding higher technology skills, particularly skills in terms of being able to convert traditional processes, traditional business models into that's pivoted towards the online. I think that's the second thing that we are actually looking at. And the third thing I'm actually observing is, in fact, even with my students, a prolonged period of being online, so teaching and learning has somewhat changed, yeah? So that sort of causes certain issues as well. I mean, we do actually notice that students seem to be, while they are good online in terms of teaching and learning, and that is very seamless, but we are still very mindful in terms of the ability to sort of take on more leadership, social working, social networking, and the communication sort of aspects. So the softer skills, we are really paying more attention towards that because we sort of missed a good 2 years in terms of that. Yeah, while they are really good from a skills perspective, competency perspective, fine, that can still be delivered online. But what we are noticing is there a gap in terms of the ability to sort of connect with the broader part of society more on the softer side?
Dato' Khalis, I'd like to get your thoughts coming from the industry perspective. Professor Murali mentioned that employers have become more picky in a way when it comes to hiring youth. Do you agree with that?
Picky in a way, but we look for potentials. We look for people who we think that are able to grow in that particular role, people who can adapt in difficult situations. So we look for potentials, and we would endeavor to sort of build them up into those abilities. In our organization, we do have this program where we call it a LEAP program, Leadership Executive Accelerated Program. Now we pick entry levels we see have high potentials that not only on the academic qualification but the ability to that shows potential leadership skills, and basically I would take this group of people and throw them across in the organization, let them roll the punches, as you say, or get their hands dirty in organize in crisis management and in different difficult situations, is to build them up so that when they graduate from this particular program, they are a well-rounded leader. So see, we look for potentials, and hopefully this will be the norm for future recruitments into the organization.
So you've got your eye on youth that you see could progress further in the company. I want to talk about the state of youth unemployment. I have the latest statistics that were issued just earlier this month from the Department of Statistics, where the unemployment rate for 15 to 24 years old stood at some 12.5% this May. It's still a disproportionately high figure compared to our overall unemployment rate of 3.9%. So from your point of view, Professor Morelli, what do you think are the main hurdles to youth employment at the moment? Is it a structural situation where there just aren't enough jobs for youth, or is there something more to this story?
I think there are a few key things to actually look at. So one, we go back to the issue of mismatch between skills and competencies that the industry requires versus what institutions are actually producing. Like, for us, we at Asia Pacific University, we are really committed to producing 100% employment rate, and we are very successful in doing that. For one simple reason, we just ensure that students are ready for the industry. What we find, the higher employment rate, if you just look at another statistics that's actually released by a research, which actually shows that about 33.7% of youth who have tertiary education are not readily employable. And the reason is largely because there's probably a mismatch between curriculum that's actually being done and offered in the university to what the industry actually require. So in essence, there's actually an additional 6 to 9 months before industry can actually readily, you know, use this talent that's available. So one thing that we are very mindful is just to ensure that whatever curriculum that we design, we develop, and we actually impart on the students is actually industry-driven, industry-backed. So that collaborative between industry and academia is a must for us, has been, and will always be. The second thing that we probably need to look at is, which is probably not much talked about, is the NEET category, N-E-E-T, so which actually stands for not in education, employment, or training, that 15 to 24 sort of group. Yeah, and this, I was actually reading a report, I think it's from the Edge Market, which kind of quoted something along the lines of 1 out of 10 youth would actually fall into this high-risk category. So these are potentially people who could be involved in the dark economy. What I mean by dark economy, the gangsterism, the drug addiction, and so on, which is called vulnerable youth, or youth at risk. Yeah. So 1 in 10, and this is, they're not trained, they're not in education, they're not in any form of employment, which actually kind of prevents them from really being employed. So what is their outlet? Something that we really need to look at and probably worry a bit more from either a policy perspective, both macro, microeconomics level.
Those are some of the groups that you feel are being overlooked at this stage when it comes to youth unemployment. Yeah, those who don't have the skills and those who are completely out of the job market loop entirely. Dato' Khalis, I'd like to ask you about your observations when you're hiring youth, prospective youth employees. How do you go about assessing potential employees, and how much engagement do you have with institutes of higher education to, I suppose, communicate the kinds of skills that you're looking for?
We have started to have conversations with Institute of Higher Learning of, you know, the kind of people that we want. But we also understand that it's not, I would say, easy for them to change their curriculum overnight. Hence, we ask them for, okay, yeah, give us your brightest and your smartest all, and let us try to fit into our test and see whether they fit and they can do well. About the mismatch, okay? One thing that I've also observed is that, you know, while the unemployment rate of youth is relatively high, but when you look at the other groups, such as Zana, it's around the other age groups from 1.6 to 4.2. Hence, the question now arises that are they really, really mismatched, that they can't, or are they unable to accept, or the youth themselves are picky about jobs. Those who went to tertiary education, I guess they have invested time and money for, let's say, a certain paper qualification, and they would have their dream jobs, right? But then the jobs that they dream for is not available. So are they willing to take other kind of jobs, or are they willing to wait? And what we have noticed during the pandemic, okay, especially, some are willing to take jobs of lesser paying wages out of, I guess, economic necessity. But there are a group of people that would just wait and see, I guess. Yeah, they come from, I guess, wealthy background and say, never mind, let me wait till I get the right job. But what's also worrying is that some of them would seek for jobs outside the borders of Malaysia. If we don't do something, we can lose potential talents to other countries.
You mentioned the perception that some youth could be picky in their jobs. I heard you agreeing in the background there, Professor Murali. Is that what you're seeing among your students, perhaps? Maybe that they do have high expectations for what their starting salary or what their starting job needs to be?
Yeah, I totally agree with Dr. Khalis on the point that really it depends on which sector of the economy that we're looking at and which sector of the population in the economy that we're looking at. So, I mean, if you look at Khazanah's research, right, KRI's research, it's probably dated 3 years ago. So it's still relevant from an academic perspective, anything 3 years or it's considered recent. I mean, they actually show that overall, they seem not to be picky. However, Dr. Khalis, again, to kind of echo what he said, if you take the 3D sector, for example, the jobs that are classified as 3D sector, our youth are willing to work in these sectors, but they do in Singapore. they migrate to Singapore to sort of, why? And it's quite obvious, right? The currency is probably three times higher, and also salaries are slightly higher in terms of that particular perspective. So that's one. And I was actually talking to students in terms of, are you guys actually picky for jobs? And again, here, it's kind of echo Dato's viewpoint. If you look at the B40 sector, so for them, it's like, what I get, I will do first. You get the kerja dapat, kita jalan.
Yeah,
jalan dulu. Eh?
Right.
And because they need that money and it's they need to support their parents. Parents have lost jobs because of the pandemic. They're still recovering, trying to rebuild families, rebuild homes. So they don't mind taking on whatever, especially in the gig sector.
Right.
But when you talk to people who come from probably upper middle class or the T20 sort of sector, they are a bit more, let me get a job that kind of fits my academic qualification. So I'm willing to sort of try and wait for a while. And I may not want this particular job because I think my qualification should actually warrant me a salary of say 3,500 a month or something like that. And so they're waiting for that ideal dream job. Mm-hmm. And the families are okay because they have the social net. Yeah? So that social net allows them to sort of, I guess, quote unquote, be a bit picky in that sense. But overall, I think based on reports that we are reading and based on research that's being done, it's really this issue of whether they are picky depends on who we talk to, who we ask, and which sort of reports are we actually looking at. Yeah.
I want to come back to this issue of picky job seekers after a quick break. I'm speaking to Datuk Muhammad Khalis Abdul Rahim, Group Chief Human Capital Officer at Malaysia Aviation Group, and Professor Dr. Murali Rahman, Deputy Vice Chancellor at the Asia Pacific University. Stay tuned for more BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to the Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and on World Youth Skills Day today, I'm speaking to Datuk Muhammad Khalis Abdul Rahim, Group Chief Human Capital Officer at Malaysia Aviation Group, and Professor Dr. Murali Rahman, Deputy Vice Chancellor at the Asia Pacific University. Earlier in the conversation, both of you mentioned how some youths are holding out for the ideal job to their detriment. I guess I'd like to push back a little bit on the idea of youth being picky with what they choose. I mean, it could also be the fact that youth today are perhaps just more aware on what decent work entails and what decent work standards mean. And that's what they're asking for. They're asking for fair remuneration. They're asking for equal treatment, social protection. So on that front, perhaps it's the employers that actually need to live up to the end of the bargain in order to entice youth workers. No, Datuk Khalis?
Yep. You see, to be employers, they too cannot take things for granted. You know, they have to make efforts to ensure that they have an attractive employer brand proposition, hence attracting the right kind of talents. They have to, you know, pay reasonable wages. Now, youths today look not only for good remuneration, but they would like to see a meaningful career in an organization. ESG is becoming more top of mind amongst youth job seekers today. And companies need to really practice what they preach. The other statistics that I think we should really look at, you know, when we talk about unemployment, some of them actually have already started work, but they resign because they don't like the job. And they rather, you know, be unemployed for a while before they go to another job. We should also look at the retention rate of youth in an organization. Coming from the industry, and most industries, you'll see that there's a higher attrition rate among youth. Or the younger workforce compared to the ones that are more established. Even though they have landed on a job, but don't take them for granted. You know, they are always looking for something better. They will move on. But the other thing also, if I can add on, that we should also consider some of them have actually dropped out of the labor market. they decide to be more entrepreneurial, running their own business. Many have opted for gig jobs and online digital businesses, you know, and they have seen their friends succeeding in that, and they wanted freedom. So we have a group of them that is into that category. It is changing, and but employees themselves, as I said, should not take things for granted. They themselves need to restructure their work environment. Employees in Malaysia are starting to be more open to the possibility of having a combination of gig and permanent workforce. Contract for services as opposed to a contract of service is now being seen in a more favorable light. And employees need to also understand that this gives the companies the flexibility to better manage their workforce in a future downturn. At the same time, allowing this use that they're being commissioned by the company not to be too dependent on just one single source of income. I think it's moving towards that direction.
Interesting points you make there, Datuk Khalis, in terms of how employers are also shifting their labor strategy in a way, shifting the composition of their workforce to be more flexible and to better suit the different requirements or demands of the labor force. I want to jump on the issue of entrepreneurship and ask Professor Murali about what he thinks, because there is a lot of emphasis on entrepreneurship in Malaysia as a means to make a living. And I'm wondering whether this is the right approach to take for youth. Should the youth be encouraged to be entrepreneurs from a young age, essentially?
I think they should be, Susanna, because it's not only in terms of potentially starting my own or her own business, right, becoming entrepreneur, but one could actually examine the sort of competencies that we're trying to inculcate into the youth as we move them towards an entrepreneurial mindset. So if we look at research from an industry perspective, what's industry actually looking from? The colleagues mentioned the soft skills sort of perspective. Again, it was spot on. There are five C's that we look at. Yeah, communication, collaboration, creativity, confidence, and socio-emotional intelligence or compassion. So this is the five C's that are very, very important for any youth. And this is also in line with the World Economic Forum. We talk about 21st century skills. A lot of this actually driven by what makes a good entrepreneur. So having said that, what we are doing here at the university is actually we are embedding the entrepreneurship as part of the DNA in the ecosystem of the university. So yep. Whatever program that you're actually doing, be it engineering, all the way to business and management, IT, computing, the entrepreneurship DNA is a must for all the students for us. And we are actually redesigning the curriculum to sort of fulfill that aspirations. It's becoming a very important part of the ecosystem for us, just to ensure that the youth are really aware and are very mindful about what are the competencies you actually need to have. Because we find when we teach them this, they become more resilient. They become more robust in their thinking. Right, it's not, yeah. So right. I think that is what we're trying to prepare them for. Mm-hmm. So even if they decide not to venture into their own startup or their own initiative, they have that qualities which probably industry will actually appreciate.
Just to echo on what Prof was saying. Well, I totally agree with Prof saying that not all young people should go into business. But youth need a sense of entrepreneurship to succeed in today's workforce. Now, this means, Shilana, that young people need to be motivated in their jobs. You know, companies, we want workers who have forward-thinking attitude, who can initiate changes and ideas of their own, you know, young people or youth today are expected to do more than just the list of duties. So we're really looking for people who can make difference in the company.
So from what I'm hearing, entrepreneurship is a means to inculcate the soft skills that are valued by employers. Looking at it from a technology perspective and with the whole Industrial Revolution 4.0 and the move towards digitalization, I'm wondering, Professor Murali, as a professional technologist, what are the skill sets needed among youth today that are perhaps lacking among Malaysians that maybe they're not getting in the current education curriculum, whether in secondary or tertiary education?
Okay, if you look at the technology skills, you can look at the technology trajectory, right? So you could, one reference point we always use is the Gartner hype cycle. So Gartner is like known for where is technology, where are we currently in terms of the technology landscape and where are we headed probably 10, 20 years from now. So if you look at it from a youth perspective, from an employment perspective, I think if you take youth that come from a business and management perspective. So they are typically the non-core tech people, right? Even for that, what we're doing now is we're trying to make sure that they have certain basic technology competencies. For example, digital marketing is a must, even for the non-techie students, digital marketing and digital leadership as well. So using tools, using technical tools. So that's one. And also data-driven decisions. Yeah. So that's where data analytics comes in. So that's from a from a non-technology perspective, I think what skill sets you sort of need to develop, regardless through formal training or non-formal sort of processes, is one, probably looking at things from a digital marketing perspective, looking at it from a digital leadership perspective. That's key thing. From a technology perspective, the three or four things that we really need to focus on and which we're doing currently is one, artificial intelligence, AI is always there. Data analytics, again, getting down deeper into data analytics as part of the IR 4.0 spectrum. And the other one is robotics and automation. So I think these are, and last but not least, of course, as more businesses go in the online world, into the online foray, cybersecurity becomes a very important skill that they actually need to have. So technology cuts across regardless of the subject domains that we actually offer. So for youth, from a training perspective, formal, non-formal, I think this would be sort of the skill sets that they actually need to embark on and be ready for.
In the little bit of time that we have, I would like to ask your thoughts about policy, government policy, and what kind of policies work in terms of making sure that our youth are employed. So we've seen over the past year, the government has hosted a host of initiatives across different ministries to increase opportunities for youth employment. Dato' Khalis, what programs does Malaysia Aviation Group participate in, and how effective do you think these have been in increasing jobs for youths?
We have participated in almost all of the government policies in making our youth employable. But to me, all these policies are good. And I don't think I can comment much on this because I'm not an expert in policy making. But to me, what is important is it's the coordination among the various stakeholders, you know, the ministries, government agencies, and also the industry players. There has to be seamless coordination. We are always good at planning and policy making, but I think we can do better in execution through good coordination. And policies, to me, should not be stagnant. They need to be constantly reviewed and changed and adapting to the changes in the market, not flip-flopping, you know, as they were not thought through properly, but continuously improve. And there's one thing I would like to see is that the policy recognizes skills acquired through informal education and non-formal education. To me, it's quite important because, you know, I think that the society, or at least Malaysians, should now start to move towards viewing vocational qualifications as sort of on par with, let's say, a degree holder or tertiary education. You know? So we should move towards that.
Professor Morelli, what about you? What do you think about current policy measures instituted to reduce youth unemployment? And are there any gaps that you think need to be given more consideration?
First, from a policy participation perspective, I just would like to quote two projects that Asia Pacific University or APU has been involved in and will be involved in. One is the KPT or Ministry of Higher Education Career Advancement Program, KPT CAP. And since last year, we've trained 685 unemployed fresh graduates. So these are fresh graduates who still require certain gaps to be fulfilled. And we focus on six core areas, namely cybersecurity, cloud computing, data science, software development. So quote unquote, the IR 4.0 space. That is really working well. The other one that we participate heavily in is Yayasan Purnaraju Pendidikan Bumiputra. So sprint and push program. Again, we find there's a lot of traction. So these sort of programs are indeed beneficial. But we just want to ensure, and this is where I totally agree with Dato' Khalis, is programs need to be reviewed, and we ensure that whatever program that's actually been designed from a policy perspective, we have to ensure that the stakeholders actually committed in producing the outputs that are industry ready and in line with what industry requires. So I think they need to be proper documentation, making sure that the word that they use is pemantauan, that process pemantauan, or making sure the check and balance is there is very, very important. So this is where credible people actually have to be brought in to ensure that we keep producing outputs for the country. It's not just any program driven by anyone. So it's a unique PPP sort of initiative, public-private partnership, which seems to be working well and should probably be pushed forward. Yeah? If I may add, I think if we look at the ILO standards are in terms of developing youth skill set or in terms of policy formulation. So ILO actually suggests three key things. One is probably promotion of a sector-based approach in skills development. So this is where they quote countries like New Zealand, that sort of youth employment in line of industries that they're very strong in, the dairy industry, New Zealand. The other one is strengthening of workplace learning. I think Dr. Khalis talked about that, really making sure that people are actually placed on the job, the high potentials, and they are actually groomed. Yeah? So this is actually quoted from studies like in Germany, Ireland, Singapore does it well. And last but not least, I think I mentioned it earlier, is the public-private partnership. I think we look at the ILO principles and stand guided by that, with all stakeholders participating effectively. I think there's a lot of promise for youth in Malaysia.
On that note, gentlemen, thank you very much for speaking with me today on The Breakfast Grill. I've been speaking to Dato' Muhammad Khalis Abdul Rahim, Group Chief Human Capital Officer at Malaysia Aviation Group, and Professor Dr. Murali Rahman, Deputy Vice Chancellor at APU. BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.